The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
All right, let's rock and roll on a Monday on a Flames game day. We're with you locally for the next, 9, 10, 11 hours, however long until we're done, and your four-hour afternoon extravaganza is underway. It's Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, along with you on The Big Show. And, well, I liked a lot of Calgary's game on Friday night. They played really well, but did not get the result. And that kind of illustrates the situation the Flames are in right now. The way things are right now, if they don't get a result, they don't get the positive result, there's really nothing you can take away if you're the Calgary Flames. If that game was in January or February of this season, probably a different story, and you probably can have a different narrative. But, well, right now, when you're in this type of hole, yeah, it doesn't really matter how good you play. If you don't get 2 points, it doesn't matter when it's all said and done. If you don't pick up that result, it's kind of like, did you really even accomplish anything? That's kind of what Friday night felt like for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where the season's at. Whether you believe they have playoff chances or not, I mean, they're going to have to go, 17-2. And you know, when you have to go on that type of a run, when you're, asked to be at 800 or 850 win percentage, no one cares if you play well. And in fact, you might be the better team on the ice. And I think that was the case for the majority of what happened Friday. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because A, you lost the game, and B, to make matters worse, you lost the team that you're really trying to track down in that race. So then quite frankly, Pat, nobody cares at that point if you played well. So it's a tough spot to be in because you want to be able to build off of efforts like that and you want to say good things about it. But again, at the end of the day, results are all that matters, and the Flames came home 0-for in that category.
Yeah, and first of all, do I sound any louder? Is this any better?
No. No, you didn't.
No, I have no idea what the heck the problem is.
All good.
Because we are pinned.
I think it's
here.
Cute that we'll be in pillow talk all day myself. Yeah, I have no problem with that.
My gain's up. My everything has been pinned where we are, so I don't know.
Tim Khalil's fat thumbs didn't turn it down. Like, we're good there.
Well, it sounds fine to me. It's just back at the station that they're. Patty, you might have to just pin me right to the very top all day. I don't know what the problem is, but apparently I am pillow talking.
Try a different headset,
Will.
Pat.
No, it's not a headset issue. I know that much. Okay. Anywho, welcome to the program. If there are any technical difficulties, we do apologize. But yeah, that is what I took away from what we saw on Friday night. Like, I quite liked what Calgary did. Well, I thought they were probably the better team from almost start to finish, and I thought that we were talking about a group that probably deserved a better fate. And give Jake Allen a lot of credit. He played really well, but especially against that team, if you play really well, the team, the only team that matters when it comes to head-to-head games for real, like, you need to make sure that you get that result. You need to make sure that game somehow, after Lindholm tied the game early in the third period, you got to get that thing at the very least to overtime. And I know that it was kind of a weird and a fluky one, and I know that it was a it kind of caught everybody off guard when Toffoli scored that game winner, but mm-hmm. That's the scenario they're in right now. It's like the time for moral victories was gone weeks and weeks and weeks ago. And now when they had 13 and now 12 games remaining, those moral victories, they don't exist anymore. You have got to figure out a way to get that thing to overtime. And that's the situation. And I think the Flames will. I think they know it. I think they know that the time for moral victories has disappeared. And I think they know that it does not matter how well they played, it means nothing if you don't pick up the 2 points. So they're in a very, very dire situation. It's too bad because I like a lot of what we've seen from them the last four games, and I liked a lot of what we saw from them Friday night in Montreal.
Yeah, and the only thing I'll add, Pat, is to your point about they know it. I think you look at the body language when Tyler Toffoli scored that goal, and they knew at that point that that they were going to have to try and push in that final four and change to get some sort of point on the board, and they just couldn't do it. And you wonder about the pressure and the situation like that, because any late goal, you feel like it's you're now down by four as opposed to just down by one. So
yep.
I certainly felt that. I certainly saw that on Friday when Toffoli scored that goal. You kind of just felt like, yeah, that was going to be it. The Flames were not going to be coming back in this contest. And that was too bad because you're right. They have been doing some pretty good things. But quite frankly, and I'm trying not to be overly blunt, but nobody cares. Nobody cares if you play good and get 0 points considering how the season's gone. And, you know, nobody really cares if you're playing your best hockey at this point, because in this market, Pat, I've said this before on Friday, and I'll say it, Thursday, and I'll say it again. I mean, this is typical Calgary Flames. Season's pretty much done, and they're finding a way to play their best hockey. That is extremely frustrating for a lot of people, and I can only imagine what it's like for management and the coaching staff.
We are underway on a Monday game day edition of The Big Show. It's the Flames and the Ottawa Senators from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome tonight. Game day brought to you by our friends at South Point Toyota. Here's what I can tell you about tonight's game. If you're looking for it on TV, it starts at 7 o'clock. It'll be a Sportsnet Flames broadcast tonight. So a Sportsnet Flames West.
Pay-per-view.
The Habs and the Oilers. Remember the pay-per-view days?
Yeah, I do.
Remember when not every game, like every game wasn't even on TV, like there were actually games that were just dark? Like that was mm-hmm. that was not that long ago when there's like, oh yeah,
you have to pull out the
games this year.
I always joke with the boss and with other people in the office or even people at the rink. I mean, that's when you needed the pocket schedule, Pat. I know that pocket schedule day was huge back in the days when I went to school from grade school, because you'd open it up and you go, okay, these are the games that are on TV. These are the nights I absolutely have to be free. And every other night, well, I'll try and listen on the radio beside my bed as I fall asleep. But I do remember those days. And, you know, it'd be a huge deal when Sportsnet had like 21 games or 19 games. That was, that was a massive deal.
So it is a Sportsnet Flames on the companion channel. That's where you're going to find it on television. 7 o'clock face-off. We'll be on the air at 6 o'clock. You know all 82 games are always right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. 6 o'clock for Flames warm-up. Peter Labardius is back with us tonight. He'll also be back in his regular spot at 2:30 this afternoon as we chat with the color voice of the Calgary Flames in about 20 minutes' time. Jacob Markstrom gets the start in net for Calgary. We're expecting Matt Murray to start for the Ottawa Senators. And it looks like this in terms of how Calgary is going to line up tonight, as we expect anyway. And this is because of the way practice looked like yesterday. Optional morning skate today. Lindholm between Gaudreau and Tkachuk. Sean Monahan with Andrew Mangiapane and Brett Ritchie. Michael Backlund between Milan Lucic and Joachim Nordstrom. And with Ritchie back on Monahan's right side, that moves Dylan Dubé to the right side of a line with Derek Ryan and Josh Levo. That's what we're anticipating to start this game tonight. No change on the blue line. Giordano with Tanev, Hanifin with Anderson, Valimaki and Stone. That's what it looks like tonight for the Flames and the Senators. As we continue the conversation, it's Pat Steinberg and Will Nault along with you this afternoon. Let's take a look back to Friday afternoon and Friday night. It is time for the Game in a Minute.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the brand new 2022 QX55 for $299 semi-monthly with $4,995 down. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Hockey fans, happy spring and welcome inside Bell Center in Montreal. We're following a 4-1 win on Wednesday. Mark Giordano and the 19-21-3 Calgary Flames will try to stretch their winning streak to a season-long 4 games and move to within 2 points of the fourth and final playoff spot in the Scotia North Division by beating the team that they're chasing, Shea Weber and the 18-13-9 Montreal Canadiens. Canadiens keep it in, though. Suzuki will turn into the far corner, drop to Foley, steps in, shoots, and scores! Tyler Toffoli rips the puck over the outstretched glove of Jacob Markstrom and reaches the 20-goal plateau for the fifth time in his career, and he gives the Canadiens a 1-0 lead. Behind the Canadiens net, Tkachuk gives it to Gaudreau, he centers Lindholm with a backhand, scores! What a goal by Elias Lindholm, who fans on a forehand shot and from his knees buries a backhand shot. And the Flames tie this game at 1. Skips the puck into the near corner. And now it's centered in front. They score. Yoel Armia finds Tyler Toffoli coming in late, and he chips the puck into the top corner of the Flames net. And the Canadians jump back out in front. They've got a 2-1 lead. Here's Gaudreau, right point. Anderson with a shot, bouncing puck, and it rolls wide of the net. And time runs out on the Flames at Bell Centre in Montreal. They outshoot, they outchance, they outplay, but they do not outscore the Canadians in this hockey game. And Montreal increases their lead on Calgary in the fight for the fourth and final playoff spot in the Scotia North Division to 6 points with a hard-fought 2-1 win.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the brand new 2022 QX55 for $299 semi-monthly with $4,995 down. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
Flames and Ottawa Senators tonight from the Scotiabank Saddledome. And here's one thing that we know for sure, Will. Like, whether you've thrown the towel in or are waving the white flag as a Flames fan on the season already, or if you're still waiting to do that, if you're still hanging on and believe that this team can get to the postseason. And I know there are ample, there's ample size on both of those factions right now. They've already lost 5-7 to the Ottawa Senators. You can't lose another one. Like, we had the fun last week when it going into the Wednesday game against the Habs, you know, must win or can't lose. I know this. You absolutely cannot lose another game to the Ottawa Senators. That much is unacceptable. This one, you have got to get 2 points, whether you get it in a shootout, whether you get Jacob Markstrom, who needs, like, you cannot lose to the last place team in the North Division a game. That simply cannot happen. Or I think you can start to nail the coffin shut.
Well, for me, the coffin's already been shut. I think that happened on Friday when you lose to the team that's directly in front of you and the team you're trying to track down. But if there were any sort of life, yeah. I mean, whether it's tonight or the next three, Friday, Saturday, and next Monday against Montreal, I said this to you over text this morning, and I'll say it on the air right now. I think a loss in any of those four games, I don't care if it's against Ottawa or Montreal, you know, obviously the loss to Ottawa is less detrimental, but I think any loss in the next four, Pat, is probably the death blow, I think, for the Flames and their season.
There's something about this Habs team that they are so committed to keeping this door open for both the Flames and the Canucks. Like, go take a look at how many games in hand.
But if they were committed, they would have lost on Friday.
What's
that? If they were committed, they would have lost on Friday.
I don't think they're purposely. They're not purposely committed.
No, I don't. I'm just giving you a hard time.
They beat the Flames, and then, like, they couldn't afford a loss to the Senators either. They barely beat the Flames on Friday and then lose to the last place Sens the next day. Now, give Ottawa credit. And Daryl Sutter was very adamant about this morning as well, that, you know, Sens are playing much better, and you've got to take them seriously. Like, this team has really turned a corner in the second half of the season, and they are not an also-ran. They're well-coached. They're getting good goaltending, all of that type stuff. But, like, if you're the Montreal Canadiens, you're trying to solidify a playoff spot. You're a team that has pretty much limped and scuttled their way along ever since you made a coaching change. Like, those are games you can't lose. So, look, we talked about this on Thursday. I don't have a ton of faith in what the Flames or the Canucks are going to do. The only reason why I think the door is still open, the only reason as to why I think if you're a fan of either of those teams that you can still have somewhat playoff hope, is because Montreal has done nothing to slam that door shut. That's the only reason why I think this thing remains a conversation. It's less about the teams chasing. It's more about the team being chased right now.
100% fair, but if the team chasing also can't get traction, then I'm pretty confident in the team protecting. You'd rather be protecting than chasing down, but yeah, I'm with you. It's not like Montreal is all of a sudden leading you to believe that door has been slammed shut, mm-hmm. but you know, again, I think this Flames team has shown us enough this year that, you know, they do just enough to get close to make you believe, and then they pull it right out, and we'll see what tonight brings. First game back at home, too, after a road trip. We know how those go usually for this group, so we'll see. This is not a fun matchup. As you say, Ottawa's playing better. It's been a hard matchup all year for Calgary, but they absolutely need to find a way to get these 2 points. If they don't, while we're closer to actually breaking down the autopsy of this body as opposed to just believing it still has a little bit of life in it.
Let me ask you this, Because for a second, let's take out the let's take out the implications, or let's take out where the Flames sit in the standings, or let's take out the fact of the matter is that this might frustrate Flames fans that you play one way most of the season and then you start playing much better when it feels like the pressure is off. But Will, is this the best stretch of hockey we've seen from Calgary this season, dating back to last Saturday and the 5-0 win over Edmonton, then a win over Toronto, win over Montreal, and a tight loss to the Canadiens 2 days later? Is this the best stretch of hockey we've seen from the Flames this season?
I mean, sure, but at the end of the day, does it really matter? I mean, that does it really have any juice to it? And the reason why I say that so emphatically is that, you know, I think a lot of us believe, Pat, that this team is going to look dramatically different next year. We don't know if it's going to be a full rebuild. We don't know if it's going to be a certain group of team members that are moved out and new ones are brought in. I don't know what that looks like. But I just, you know, you wonder being able to build off of something or creating that new culture. We've seen that before, whether it be individuals or even the team. Are they playing better? Sure. But at the end of the day, does that make me believe or change my opinion on where this group is overall? No, it doesn't for me at all. It really doesn't.
No, not really. Like,
so that's why I say, does it really matter? You know what I mean?
I got that question on overtime, and somebody asked, like, if this continues, does it change your opinion as to changes in the offseason or stuff? It doesn't for me. I still think those things are necessary. I still think that they have to make some significant and pretty sweeping changes in the offseason. But I will say that ever since moving Gaudreau to a line with Lindholm and Tkachuk, that line's looked pretty good. And ever since moving Giordano on the left side with Chris Tanev, that pairing has looked pretty high-end. And so some of those changes that were made prior to the 5-0 win over Edmonton have looked pretty good in the four games since. Now, I do remember that when Daryl Sutter took over, the first three or four games looked pretty good for Calgary as well before things dropped off and they went on to lose 9 of 11 and put themselves in the situation they're in right now. So I'm not sitting here saying that everything's solved and they're going to just continue doing this from now until the end of the season. But I can say that this four-game stretch has probably been their best stretch of hockey all season long. The way they're limiting chances, the way they're making life difficult on the opposition, the way that they're limiting elite talent on the other side. That the problem is, and this I have a hard time separating it, Will, is A, too little too late, and B, just the what we were talking with Andrew about on Thursday is that you do this now, and now all of a sudden you put yourself in a spot where most Flames fans believe this team is going to play well enough to miss the playoffs by a couple of points and thus play themselves out of a better draft pick. I think that's the frustrating thing that everybody is worried about right now. But in a bubble or in a vacuum, yeah, I do think this is the best stretch that hockey the Flames have played this year. It's just too bad it comes when, for all intents and purposes, it's probably too little too late.
And just for me, Pat, like, who really cares? Because it tells us nothing. It really tells us nothing about this group, right? They're not
telling me Joe Colburn lighting it up down the stretch.
Exactly.
Didn't
or
tell
how
us
about
anything?
Lance Bolma scored what 30 goals? Yeah, great. Congratulations. It just tells us nothing. So I don't care if they're playing good hockey, sure. But I'm the same way that you just talked about. The first four games under Daryl were really good too, and then the next 10 were awful. So it tells us nothing because at the end of the day, they're going to miss the playoffs. The team's going to look different next year. For me, it does nothing, and I quite frankly don't care if they're playing better because they should have been doing this earlier, and I think that's the source of frustration for a lot of people. And as for playing better for a draft pick or whatever, I don't believe in the team full tank, and I also think with the lottery system, it's foolproof anyway. You can't play for a better pick because who knows? I mean, the hockey gods or the ping pong balls.
No, but you
probably
get the frustration, right? Like, you get the fact that, like, you're like, okay, well, maybe we could be in the top five if it were to continue. But now they're playing better. It's too little too late. It's less that you can actually do anything
sure,
about
it.
It's more
sure
that it's happening. You're just like, ugh, it's banging your head against the wall and the same thing happening again. I think that's more what it comes down to for Flames fans.
Yeah, 100% fair.
Here's a few texts, 960-960, before we get to some news elsewhere in the North Division. This from Patrick D. says, the way Montreal played against Ottawa after Calgary, it told you that the game before drained them. That tells me the Flames are playing good enough to keep winning. So Patrick D, glass half full, and this slightly half empty. Listen, guys, the last time this team showed any heart on a remotely consistent basis was the year Giordano was out. The Find a Way Flames fans knew that if they were a goal behind, they'd be laying it all on the line to get the win. Sorry, this group has no heart. Second, third, and fourth line trades and or adjustments will not cut it. Couple of texts at 960-960. The news from elsewhere in the North Division would be a two-game suspension to Vancouver's Alex Edler. We don't have any update on Zach Hyman's situation, but we do know Edler's going to miss the next two games for Vancouver with that knee that he extended on Hyman last night, and that did not look pretty. The actual knee itself, and B, the result to Hyman did not look good for Hyman, and that could be a massive loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs. A two-game suspension for Alex Edler coming down during this segment. Just some instant reaction to that, Will.
Yeah, I think, I mean, suspensions this year have been ridiculous. You know, do I think it was worthy of a suspension? Sure. Do I know why it was two games as opposed to one, or why Connor McDavid didn't get anything, or Nathan MacKinnon didn't get anything for checking his helmet? I don't even know anymore about player safety. I think it was a knee, so congratulations to getting it that part right, but I don't know what justifies a two-game suspension, a one-game suspension. Everything's been weird in this 56-game year. It pretty much is my same feeling on player safety the last half decade, Pat. They don't have a system, and it's pretty cut and dry this year that they don't have something they go by. They don't have a standard because everything is different. So sure, two-game suspension, yeah. And as for the Hyman part of it, I'm with you. That's a huge loss for the Leafs and a guy who kind of does a bit of everything. And hopefully he's back sooner rather than later. But I know you have very similar feelings as I do on player safety. I don't know anymore. Yeah. I really don't.
Yeah, I don't. I don't even bother guessing at this stretch because it's so inconsistent. I thought that the Department of Player Safety, and when they started doing those videos, I thought that maybe they had turned a corner, but I don't believe that because I don't believe they have turned a corner. It remains as inconsistent and as infuriatingly inconsistent as ever. I did think, however, that was a bad hit. There's no reason to ever extend a knee, I find, and you know, we've had conversations about Mark Giordano. There's been a few instances where he has been in similar situations as Edler, but in that circumstance, why are you going in like that? It's a dangerous play. The only thing that is going to happen in that circumstance is you're going to put somebody in harm's way, and that's exactly what happened. If the Maple Leafs lose Hyman, I mean, I know Matthews and Marner and Riley and Brody and all, but Zach Hyman is one of the most important players on that team. You talk to anybody who watches or covers that team on a regular basis, that would be a massive loss. So I'm with you. Fingers crossed that that ends up being not serious for Zach Hyman, because it would just be a devastating loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It is a two-game suspension for Alex Edler in Vancouver. Okay, we are underway on this Monday edition of The Big Show alongside Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg. The latest ATB Financial Flames Roundup is up on our Sportsnet 960 Twitter and Facebook pages right now, or you can go check it out at sportsnet.ca/960. Every Monday and Friday, it is the Sportsnet Flames Roundup brought to you by ATB Financial. Bank digitally. It's simple, safe, and guaranteed. Well, look who's back. Peter Labardius is back in his regular segment. He joins us around the corner. Some more Flames and a little bit more from around the NHL, too. The Big Show's underway on a Monday game day. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan, Calgary.
Flames Insider, Peter Labardius, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Welcome back to the program, and welcome back, Peter Labardius, the color voice of the Calgary Flames, is back with us to kick off the week. Hello, Lou. It's good to have you back, my friend.
Well, thank you kindly. It's good to be back.
It's good to hear your voice. I know we chatted a little earlier today, but yes, it is good to have you back. It'll be good to have you back on pregame and during the game tonight as well as we get set for Calgary and the Ottawa Senators. We're back on the big show alongside Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg. Lou, we were just talking about in the last segment how, you know, the Flames have been playing some pretty good hockey of late, and on Friday night they probably deserved a better result, all things considered. Really solid 60-minute effort when you take a look at, you know, everything but the score, but they come away with no points. And I guess what we were talking about is how it kind of really illustrates the situation the Flames are in right now, where this was January or February or earlier in the season, you probably could have come away from Friday night saying that there were a lot of good things done by the Flames, but I guess you can say that coming out of Friday this time, but in the end, it doesn't get them anywhere, and the hole that they're in right now is one where moral victories kind of don't matter anymore.
Well, they certainly don't, but how you play in the process, I think, still does, and it's a very, very tall order. I'll let you guys break down the math. The problem is 3 of 4 was essential because you'd won 2 of 11 prior to that stretch. So you've clawed your way back a little bit. You have a really important game tonight. There's absolutely no room for error. And if you can put the Ottawa Senators to bed tonight, which we know at 2-4-1 this season has not been easy whatsoever. And guess what? All you have to do is watch a lot of the other teams who play them. They are never an easy out, especially the last month. If you watch them, and I've watched them a lot, you know, they are no fun to deal with. And I'm guessing they probably won't be again tonight, but it's non-negotiable. And if you can win tonight, you have 3 upcoming games with the Montreal Canadiens. But you need to win a hockey game tonight. That's all you can do. That's all you can focus on. And anything outside of that probably won't be good enough.
Just overall, what have you seen from Calgary's game, dating back to the win Saturday, last Saturday, over the Edmonton Oilers, a 5-0 win at home, and then obviously the 3-game road trip?
Well, Pat, they haven't given up very much. I think Jacob Markstrom is back at a really, really good level. Mark Giordano, for me, since he went permanently or more permanently with Chris Tanev, just shows you again, even in this case, I think it's given Giordano more freedom on the offensive side of the game to play with Tanev. He has points in six. He has 6 points in his last 7 games. He's been around it, looks a lot more comfortable. So some of the changes that were made going into that big win against Edmonton, I think, have certainly paid some dividends. You know, even on the game Friday, I'm not so sure I didn't like their game Friday better than I liked the game Wednesday. But they literally made 2 or 3 mistakes, and it cost them a game 2-1. So I like a lot of what I'm seeing in terms of the structure. I think they've started to create a little bit more. It's still something of concern, but I certainly see way, way more to be positive about in the last 4 than was the case probably in 7 of the 8 prior to that.
And I think too, Lou, just on that point, I mean, it just kind of hammers home for me as well. Not to take anything away from Giordano, because I'm with you. I think he's been better. But for me, more than anything, it kind of hammers home the value of Chris Tanev and kind of how he can even stabilize that pair a little bit. Because I know Daryl talked about that. Not to single out Rasmus Anderson too hard here, but certainly mentioned that, you know, he felt Mark had to do a little too much work and was making up for his partner. And I think just more seeing more value here from Chris Tanev as well.
Well, Tanev's been an outstanding player for this team. I think start to finish, I would make a pretty strong argument that no one on the team has been better, whether you're Quinn Hughes or Mark Giordano. I don't think it, Noah Hanifin, I don't think it matters. He's an elite defender. He makes people around him better. Here's a bit of an analogy I was thinking about, guys, involving somebody else in the North. Shea Weber, who obviously has been a defensive stalwart in many ways his whole career, when he started playing with Ben Sherratt, when that move happened a couple of years ago, I think the play of Sherratt really allowed Weber to have some more freedom in his offensive game. And I'm seeing the same types of things right now with what Tanev is allowing Giordano to have happen. I really see a true comparison of those two situations. And that can happen as players get older. You know, Shea's 35, Mark's 37, and things can change depending on your role and, you know, who your partner is. And the other thing that's really, really important, guys, going forward, whether it's, you know, tonight, but more about the future, is the progress of Noah Hanifin, who has really had a terrific year. You know, those two guys, talking about Hanifin and Anderson, they could be a real top pairing for this team potentially for many years. And I think it's important that they have this opportunity to play together and grow together. I know that it's, you know, it's not been the first and won't be the last. We've seen them play together lots the last couple of years, but their ability to grow together and lean on one another, I think is a really, really important investment for this team.
Bring this one all the way around, Lou. I mean, they're playing a little bit better here, and certainly the loss on Friday doubly hurts because it's against the team you are directly chasing. But is Montreal leaving that door open for you at all? Like, where do you sit today on April 19th on the Flames and their playoff chances?
Well, Montreal has some work to do. You know, I have not seen a lot out of the Canadiens the last couple of weeks that has certainly allowed me to feel a great deal of confidence. In fact, I think they have scuffled to find their consistent way, going maybe all the way back to the first 10 games of the season. There's been a lot of in and out, and make no bones about it, it was great for them to get Sherratt back. That's a big piece on the back end for them that I think really, really hurt when he was out of the lineup. And the other factor is you cannot ever dispute what Brendan Gallagher means to that team. You know, They lose one of the top 5-on-5 scorers in the league. They lose their heart and soul. They lose a guy who's just prepared to do absolutely anything and everything he can night in and night out. Those guys are hard. Like, you don't really replace those guys. So, you know, the math is still great for them. There's lots of things about that team to like, but that window is now somewhat open.
That's what it is. Peter Labardi is with us. He's back in his regular spot, 2:30s here on the Big Show. And that's, you know, it's less that I've got a ton of faith in what the Flames are going to do, or I think you got to factor Vancouver into this thing as well. It's less about my faith in those two teams. It's more my lack of faith in Montreal, because I'm with you, Lou. There's just, they're not doing a whole lot for me right now. They don't score a lot. They make everything seem really difficult. I still don't understand the coaching change. I didn't understand when they fired Claude Julien. I understand it even less a number of months on. So yeah, it's Montreal leaving the door open as opposed to either of Vancouver or Calgary keeping the door open, but it doesn't really matter. The door is still open, which is why if you're the Flames, you've got to be playing like that door is still open.
The caveat, though, guys, that I'm going to add is it's going to be a fascinating week. Montreal obviously is in Edmonton for a couple this week before they deal with the Flames for 3 in 4 starting on Friday. The other thing about Montreal is it's funny how urgency sometimes can return when it needs to return. Right. The math has been in their favor. It's still in their favor. So again, I'm not, you know, trying to diminish the fact that I haven't loved their group lately either. But things can change a whole lot when, you know, your season starts to be on the line after you've been in a pretty comfy position in many ways for quite some time. So this will be a fascinating week for the home team, talking about Calgary, and an equally fascinating week for the team they're trying to track down.
How much of a factor is Vancouver in this playoff chase for you after finally coming back last night, taking a pretty gutsy 3-2 overtime win over Toronto?
Well, one thing under Travis Green that I know about the Vancouver Canucks is they play their tail off. They're well coached. You know, it was hard not to cheer for them yesterday after all that they've been through. And, you know, I'm not going to necessarily make this about anything outside of the Canucks, but as I sat here in my chair yesterday thinking about what some of those guys have been through the last few weeks, trust me, that is not an easy thing to bounce back from. Now, I understand these are the most elite of the elite athletes, but when this virus hits you hard, it absolutely can buckle you. So, you know, and I think Travis was one of the hardest hit of anybody. But they're going to play their tails off. That's what they do. They're going to compete regardless of who it's against, night in and night out. So, Pat, it's still hard for me to think about them outside of it was great to see them last night. It'll be great to see them again against Toronto coming up tomorrow. But I can't say enough good things about their ability to rally and work, and that was quite a win yesterday.
Before we let you go, my friend, 1,768 is a significant number because that is the number of games played Patrick Marleau will have played after tonight. He will break Gordie Howe's NHL games played record when the Sharks take on the Vegas Golden Knights this evening. Just a thought on a good Saskatchewan boy hitting 1,768 and putting himself all alone at number one overall in games played.
Well, when people hit milestones, Pat, the first thing that I reflect on is when I've watched a player with my own two eyes for the first time. And I remember he was playing for the Swift Current Bantams, and I know that's not necessarily a good term anymore, but he was 14 years old, and I watched him in a tournament in Regina. And I was absolutely blown away by his skill level. A short time after that, which was a pretty huge win in the province of Saskatchewan, he was an underage player in 1995 at the Canada Winter Games in Grand Prairie, and he led Saskatchewan to the gold medal. The gold medal, beat Alberta 3-1. He scored two big goals in that game. So early on, you could see that he had incredible talent. He is just as classy a person, durable, his skating right at the top. He's been a great teammate. And I'm a very, very proud person from that province. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me proud. So I grew up in Saskatoon. Gordie Howe grew up in Floral, Saskatchewan, which is literally a couple of miles outside of Saskatoon. And now to have one Saskatchewan guy go past another is just, it's remarkable. And to be honest, it makes me feel a little old.
Fair enough, but it is pretty remarkable.
By the way, just quickly, did you see, because they're 1-2 in that draft, did you see Joe Thornton was asked about it today? He says, I'm not challenging that record. He can have it. But that was pretty funny.
Well, which is a little interesting because I'm not sure anybody loves playing the game much more than he does. So
yeah, he'll break that record in Switzerland, Lou. You know that.
Yeah, he might break it somewhere. He might break it somewhere.
Any just quickly, anybody want to answer the trivia question as to who went number three in that draft? No?
It's got to be...
In 97?
Lou probably knows.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
The only reason
he's a former Flame, isn't he?
He is. And the only reason I know this is because, and the reason why it's front of mind is because Daryl Sutter was asked about Patrick Marleau just over a week ago, and he was talking about this draft, and he was saying, man, that was a really great draft for centerman Marleau, Thornton, and he couldn't remember who number three was, so I went and I looked it up. It was former Flame Olli Jokinen went number three in that year's draft. Completely irrelevant.
You talk about
being
now. Olli didn't play in it, which is probably one of the reasons I don't remember. But I remember watching the 1997 Top Prospects game with the two guys that we've been talking about, front and center, Maple Leaf Gardens. And again, 1997 wasn't yesterday.
No. Breaking news: it was not.
And the one guy. The guy who goes fourth is now the GM of Canada at the World Championship. So yeah, 97 was not yesterday. That's for sure.
No doubt. Yes. Hey Lou, it's good to have you back, my friend. It's good to chat with you.
Okay.
We'll talk to you tonight at pregame. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys.
Flames Insider, Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Okay, Calgary, the city was in quite the frenzy 17 years ago today. We'll tell you about it and how a legend was born when we come back on this date in Flames history. Stay with us on the big show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Flames, they'd win game three of that series by a 4-3 score. Bennett, Sean Monahan, TJ Brody all scored their first career playoff goals. And yeah, it was Bennett's first ever game here at the Scotiabank Saddledome because he had debuted at the end of the regular season in Winnipeg, and the first two games were played in Vancouver. Flames win 4-3. They'd take a 2-1 series lead and go on to win in six games. I'll spare you the highlights because A, we're out of time, and B, I'm just feeling in a good mood. But on this date in 2017, Flames swept by the Anaheim Ducks in game four. Ducks won 3-1 here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. And 2 years later, 2 years ago today, Flames lost game five of their first round series to the Colorado Avalanche by a 5-1 score. Avalanche won the series 4-1. And finally, happy birthday to Robin Regier, who turns 41 today. The former Flames defenseman born in Brazil on this date in 1980, acquired in February of 98 in the Theo Fleury trade. He'd go on to play 827 games with Calgary, 29 goals, 134 assists, and 163 points. Happy 41st birthday to Robin Regier this date in Flames history.
Today in Flames history, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery, keeping quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or visit the patio in the Curry Barracks.
Next up, the latest on Zach Hyman, a reaction to a suspension out of Vancouver, and all of what is going down with the Canucks right now. We'll get the latest from the North Division and around the NHL with NHL insider Chris Johnston. He joins us next on the big show, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
You're locked on to the big show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
So welcome in our next guest. It's good to catch up with Sportsnet NHL insider Chris Johnston, who joins us live on the program right now. Fingers crossed, anyway. It's been one of those days when it comes to wireless across the country. So fingers crossed. CJ, you got me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Ha-ha! Yes, okay. We're good. This is good news. I know that you had issues trying to do Hockey Central today. We had some issues in the break, and now we've all worked it out technically. It's a big win for us today, CJ. It's good to talk to you. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. We got to find the small victories wherever we can.
No kidding. No doubt about it. Well, we found out that Alex Edler has been suspended 2 games for the knee-on-knee hit with Zach Hyman from yesterday night in that big 3-2 overtime win for the Canucks. Before we get to Edler, do we have any feel as to what's happening on the Hyman front and how serious that injury might be?
Nothing definitive at this point. The Leafs are due to practice in half an hour's time, give or take, in Vancouver. And we're expecting some kind of update then. I'd be surprised if he was on the ice, of course, today after missing the last half of last night's game. But, you know, initially they seemed to feel a little bit optimistic, as in you know, we're not talking long-term injury, but, you know, he wasn't getting an MRI until today. So we don't know the results of that MRI. And I think probably the biggest concern when it comes to Zach Hyman is he did have a torn ACL in his right knee after the 2019 playoffs. And it was his right knee that took the blow and that hit from Alex Edler last night. So obviously when you see that and you know he's been through that injury before, I think that there's concern that something similar could happen again.
Can you just give us a thought? You've been covering this team all year long. How important Zach Hyman is to the Toronto Maple Leafs? It's kind of hard to necessarily be able to put your finger on if you don't watch that team each and every night, but just how huge is he to what the Leafs want to accomplish each and every night?
Well, I think his value is in his versatility because he literally is the player in their team that plays on the first line in games and in other games is playing on the third line, and it's not due to his own performance. It's that it tends to be wherever he goes, the line, you know, becomes more productive and more effective. And, you know, you can see that in his underlying numbers. I believe he's fourth on the team right now in points. So he's got some, you know, sort of underrated offensive ability to produce to goals and those types of things. And then, you know, he kills penalties and plays on their power play. So, you know, I think that the hard thing maybe to put your mind around if you're not following him closely is just that he does a little bit of everything quite literally. And even on a team like the Leafs with a lot of interesting forwards or forwards that get a lot of talk on Hockey Night or in the media, you know, Hyman tends to fly below the radar, but, you know, he probably does impacts more aspects of the game than almost anyone else on their team. And certainly we've seen these last couple seasons, you know, he's been very efficient offensively, and it's not all just tapping in goals at the side of a net that someone else has done all the spade work on. I mean, he really is, you know, kind of an offensive driver. So, you know, he would be a hard guy for them to miss. I mean, no one wants to lose anyone this time of year, but I think that with the way he forechecks, with the way he kills penalties, all the things I'm sort of highlighting, mm-hmm. that's the kind that piece gets even more valuable as the games get tighter and as you get into playoff type scenarios. And so, you know, that's why if you heard you know, to the east of you, collective breath holding, that would be it. I think it's just that, you know, there's lots of guys that score more than he does, but there's not very many on the Leafs that play the all around game he does.
What did you make of the hit itself, and now knowing that Edler's been suspended two games?
I think it's just. I mean, if you look, I mean, we all know how suspensions go. I mean, there's World War III has broken out in my Twitter mentions since this suspension came down because, you know, the great fans of Toronto and Vancouver have their own view on it. But I think if you look historically, you know, those kneeing type of incidents have resulted in two or three game suspensions. You know, Alex Edler himself is a player without much history when it comes to player safety. He hasn't been suspended in 7 years for any infractions. And that factors into the decision making. And, you know, it's a hit that's dangerous. You know, he got ejected from the game, a 5-minute power play for the Leafs that they scored a goal on. You know, to miss two more games and, you know, $100,000 in salary, that's a pretty sizable punishment. I know it won't be enough for some, but I think it's consistent with what we've seen in the past and, you know, befitting the crime in this case that was committed.
NHL insider Chris Johnston is with us, joining us here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Vancouver wins that game. They come from behind, and Bo Horvat scores the overtime winner. And what was a really gutsy performance, and a performance that I don't know how many people saw that coming, knowing what Vancouver's had to battle through the last number of weeks. What did you make of the Canucks being able to pick up 2 points last night?
Well, it's a nice moment for a lot of those guys. And you know, let's not trivialize any of them that were dealing with real serious health issues or their family members, because I know there's a few on that team and in that organization that you know, dealt with that. But, you know, even for those that maybe were asymptomatic, but, you know, stuck inside for 3 weeks, and it's a long haul to get back to that next game. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some debate about whether they should be playing it at all. You know, for them to get in it and to, you know, put a bit of a makeshift lineup there with some players that probably otherwise wouldn't be playing for them, and then to grind out a victory with the help of a lot of saves from Braden Holtby, I thought was, you know, it's a nice story. It's a nice sporting moment. You could see in their post-game celebration, you know, after Horvat scored in overtime, how excited they were. And I do think it is a bit of a reward for grinding through and finding a way back to playing, and you know, should put some wind in their sails here, because they still have 18 games to complete in a pretty short amount of time to try to finish off their season. And, you know, I think if they came back and lost 6-1 or something like a lot of people might have been expecting, it would and make it a little bit more drudgery. But, you know, good for those guys for being able to play. And let's hope everyone's long-term health is intact as they do so.
Since this story, like, there's been a lot that has been reported on this story when the shutdown first happened, then when the initial schedule came out, JT Miller met with the media, and then all of a sudden their return to play got pushed back a little bit. You know, Ian McIntyre wrote at Sportsnet.ca about it and talked about how there have been some North Division teams that maybe weren't thrilled with the way Vancouver handled things, and now we've heard, and even listening to you and Elliot on Saturday headlines, maybe Vancouver players aren't as happy with the way things were handled organizationally. What do we know about this Vancouver situation and how we got to this point?
Well, it's difficult. I think what you're highlighting here correctly, Pat, is just that this goes in 10 different directions. You know, I think, you know, first and foremost, what differentiates this instance from what other teams have dealt with at times this season in the NHL is that, you know, the P1 variant of concern that the Canucks got was more transmissible than other forms of COVID. And, you know, it's produced, at least in their case, you know, more severe reactions from some of the people that got it. And so I think, you know, with that, maybe some finger pointing happens. I don't know. You know, there certainly was, you know, if you go back to when the Canucks first became aware that they were having an outbreak, the NHL sent a memo around to all teams, basically saying, here are the rules, reminder, these are the rules, and if you don't follow the rules, we can dock you draft picks and fine you. And so there was certainly an insinuation initially from the league that maybe the Canucks had not adhered as close to protocols as they'd like. And you know, that was responsible for the outbreak. You know, I think we do, again, have to be mindful it was a variant that you know, is more easily spread than the traditional COVID-19 virus. So look, there's a lot happened there. And I think, you know, with the way how long it went on, that wasn't pleasant. And, you know, the interesting thing about JT Miller's comments is, you know, they came before the players actually got on the ice and were cleared by the doctors. And, you know, I give him credit for saying it, because I think it takes certainly some courage to stand up and put yourself out there in the manner that he did. And he was doing it on behalf of his teammates. You know, I think the NHL would have got to the same conclusion that they reached anyway, though, once, you know, the doctors got the players on the ice and only, you know, 3 or 4 of 17 of them cleared on Thursday morning. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't going to be able to play Friday after that happened anyway. So, you know, I just think a lot of what you're hearing and we're getting sort of snippets from is just reflective of how hard this has been on everyone. Maybe not, you know, we have to remember, too, like the NHL hasn't been through this before. And, you know, I'm a little bit more sympathetic to a league. I know it's popular and easy to take runs at them. You know, I do think that they would have not made the Canucks play Friday, even with if JT Miller didn't say what he said. And I think that, you know, a lot of this is just, you know, a little bit learning as you go. And you know, when you don't have absolute answers, sometimes I think people get frustrated. People jump to conclusions in that nature. And I think that's some of what's happened here. You know, the best hope now, as I say, is that everyone is on the path to health, that there isn't long-term effects that these players and the staff members of the Canucks are dealing with. And, you know, maybe they play more games like last night, and that can be something that kind of sustains them coming out of this tough period.
Yeah. What do we know about the future of their American Hockey League affiliate, CJ?
Well, it doesn't sound like it's going to stay in Utica. And, you know, that decision hasn't been made 100%. You know, there's a meeting of the American Hockey League's Board of Governors on May 6th. Basically, if they're going to move or if any other league business is going to happen, it would have to be voted on at that meeting and would have to be part of the, you know, the agenda that's set, you know, a week or 10 days beforehand. And so, you know, behind the scenes, it seems that they're really working to get the AHL club a little closer to home. Now, whether that's BC or just the West Coast, I think is a little bit of an open question still at this point in time. But, you know, the story really came to light because the Utica team where they've been playing, you know, registered the trademark Utica Devils. You know, at the same time, Binghamton has found out that the New Jersey Devils are moving their farm team, presumably to Utica. So I think some of the game of musical chairs is happening behind the scenes in the AHL. And, you know, you can understand, I'm sure the Flames have similar issues at times, you know, even absent the pandemic and the border restrictions, just having a team in Stockton is not as convenient in a perfect world as if you can have it in your own backyard. Mm-hmm. And so Vancouver, I think, has really liked their time in Utica. The city, the franchise, it's a good fan base, one of the traditional AHL teams from way back in the day. But, you know, I don't think it's working for the Canucks having players so far away. And so they're working to get set up a little closer to home.
Just a few more with NHL insider Chris Johnston joining us this afternoon. CJ, what do we know about playoff games being played in this country? Are we talking about a bubble? Is that a possibility? Or is the NHL going forward with the assumption that playoff games will be played the same way regular season games have been played here in Canada?
Well, unfortunately, they're starting to have to think about a bubble. And, you know, I think that there's a recognition, you know, on all sides of this discussion that that's not ideal. I don't think it's ideal from a media standpoint, from the players and from the owners of the teams in the league. But, you know, the situation that unfolded in Vancouver happened pretty quickly. And, you know, that team didn't play for 3 weeks. You know, I don't even want to talk it into existence. But if it happens somewhere else for a team in Canada today and you go 3 weeks forward, or if it happens next week, going 3 weeks forward, I mean, you're into the playoffs and you could potentially unravel the whole thing, or have, you know, maybe even have a team withdraw, you know, from playoff competition. And so, you know, it has become a discussion. I think the league's view is that, you know, in all things being equal, they'd like to play the playoff games the way they have for the regular season. You know, that even includes the third round. I think there's some misunderstanding there. I mean, I've had people at the league tell me that in an ideal world, they'd like, you know, whichever Canadian team makes it to the conference final out of the North Division to be playing their games at home. It's just it would require some changes or some allowances from the government for the American team to fly up and play games in one of those Canadian cities. But if the government granted them that, I think the NHL would be happy with that. But, you know, let's face it, as far as we know, none of these Canadian teams have started to get vaccinated. You know, we're starting to see vaccination open up a little bit to 40-year-olds now across the country. Mm-hmm. So we're getting closer to the age range these players are in. But, you know, I think it's safe to assume that they won't be vaccinated by the time the playoffs roll around in Canada. And so I think the league has to weigh the risk and kind of the cost-benefit analysis, because there's a cost to doing a bubble. And you know, I think what's most interesting, I guess, is that they've already decided if there is a bubble for the North Division playoffs, they're going to, you know, have it somewhere in the U.S. that, you know, it just eliminates a lot of headaches and basically gets the teams down in one of the U.S. cities, and they'll be set up there, and that's where the third and fourth round would be played for whichever team plays on if they're from Canada. So it's a long way of saying nothing's been decided. You know, I think that everyone would like to have you know, games in each of the cities of the teams, but it's just not clear yet from a health standpoint if it's going to make sense to do it that way.
You reported on Saturday night, I thought this was interesting, kind of, and tell me if I'm wrong in paraphrasing this, but essentially the NHL is just going to take maybe a larger magnifying glass when it comes to some of these long-term injury reserve transactions. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, basically they've told teams, we can look at the timelines of injuries, the medical reports, you know, and they've done this in the past, but they can even go so far if there's a reason for doubt, maybe to have some kind of independent medical assessment done. And really, it's because this is a year that more teams than ever were squeezed by the flat cap. As of Saturday night, there were 17 teams, you know, using long-term injured reserve to basically be able to spend over the salary cap because of injuries they've incurred. I'm not sure if that's changed in the day or two since, but the larger point remains the same. There's a lot of teams using this, you know, whether it's Nikita Kucherov in Tampa. You know, we saw Brendan Gallagher, you know, have a broken wrist or hand. That the timeline lined right up with basically starting the playoffs. You know, the Leafs in the last week or so have gone in with Frederick Anderson and Riley Nash, who they acquired at the trade deadline. So there's a lot of teams using this, and the league's basically saying, you're on notice, we're watching closely, and obviously they're very sensitive to any notion of cap circumvention. And so, you know, I think especially if there's any case where someone's activated just in time for the first game of the playoffs, that transaction in particular will be scrutinized, that it you know, wasn't delayed a week, say, from, you know, could that player have returned for the last two regular season games or not. And, you know, there's not necessarily a whole lot they can do unless they prove beyond some doubt that there's been some funny business. But I think the teams know that they're on notice a little bit with this long-term injury provision, and you know, the league is not it's not just going to wave everything through. I think that there's going to be an extra level of scrutiny here than there's maybe been in years gone by.
Okay. And finally, we see that Max Domi has been scratched in Columbus by head coach John Tortorella. Again, that has certainly drawn some eyeballs. Last question for you. What is the future of Tortorella in Columbus? Are we coming to the end of his tenure there, do you think?
Yeah, it feels that way. You know, I don't know of any final decisions that have been reached, but the fact that he's playing out his own contract, that the season has just gone totally wrong for the organization, I think for lots of reasons, much deeper than even his own. But, you know, it feels like an inflection point where things are going to change, where some big decisions are coming this offseason, you know, be it with, you know, potential extensions for guys like Zach Werenski and Seth Jones. And, you know, I do think that the coaching component will be part of that. They have to decide if they're going ahead with him. And I think he has to decide, quite frankly, if he wants to stay there. And so, you know, the fact that we're this late in the season and that hasn't been taken care of, you know, it leads me to believe that you know, a breakup is coming. You know, it might even just be a mutual parting in this case.
Yep.
You know, where he's going to let his contract go and he's going to go see if he can work somewhere else. You know, that does happen from time to time with a coach. And, you know, I think from as far as I can tell, that's where this is most likely headed. But, you know, maybe they have a surprise for it. It just feels like they got everything they could out of that group, out of the Tortorella era, and a lot of it started to sort of fall by the wayside here, and they need to chart a new course, you know, starting this offseason.
Chris, awesome to catch up with you as always. Thanks for bearing with us technically, and we will talk to you again soon. Thanks for doing this today.
Yeah, good to hear your voice, and I'm glad technology was on our side, Pat. Be well,
this
bud.
This time it was. Most of the time today, not. I was glad that it was. Be well, my friend. Stay safe, hey?
Okay, will do.
Chris Johnston joining us live on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, open for takeout and delivery. When you're tired of cooking, call 403-248-3344. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Patty Dumas is back up next. He's got the biggest stories of the day. We're around the corner with headlines on the big show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All day long, we do the searching, the editing, the filtering. We find the good stuff, add some opinion, and call it Sportsnet 960 Headlines.
Big Show Headlines brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease the brand new 2022 QX55 for $299 semi-monthly with $4,995 down. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
All right, welcome back to the program alongside Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg, and Patty Dumas is with us this week, and he has got our headlines on a Monday. Let's go. Let's rock and roll, Patty.
Let's go. The Flames, they get back at it tonight with the Ottawa Senators. Of course, we know the math. They enter tonight 6 points out of that final playoff spot. Montreal, of course, with two games in hand. They're also in action tonight in Edmonton. Friday's loss didn't help, but then Ottawa was able to do Calgary a little bit of a favor on Saturday and beat the Habs in regulation. Here's Matthew Tkachuk on how the club has played of late.
You know, overall, even last game, we should have had a better result than what we had. I mean, it's happened a bunch this year. We've been losing late in games, and it's ultimately put us in this position. So, you know what? I think the one thing that is consistent is we've gave ourselves a great chance to win each and every night. So that's all you can ask for.
And now Calgary faces a Senator team, which they have struggled with at points this season. Here's Coach Sutter from earlier today on what the Flames need to do. Very simple from the coach.
Yeah, 12 wins. So we have 8 at home and 4 in away, so we got to win all 12.
Yeah, so after tonight, 3 straight with the Habs starting on Friday night. Pat, the math doesn't look right. How do you gauge the feeling around this team this week?
I think that they're feeling a little bit looser, Will. I think that they are a group that the pressure's off. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about that, about, you know, how maybe that has played into the fact that they have been playing some much better hockey, that pressure's off, that sometimes happens. We see it all over the league, and we've seen it before with this Flames team. So I think there's probably something to that. But they've played that. Look, from a straight up, if you're looking at this thing only inside a vacuum, Flames have played probably their best hockey of the season over the last 4 games. Really good against Toronto, really good against Edmonton. The first win over Montreal was solid. And then, yeah, they probably did deserve a better fate on Friday against the Habs. They didn't get it, but that just illustrates exactly where this team is. The margin for error, Will, is almost non-existent. And so it makes it next to impossible to come out of a loss, regardless of how well you played, thinking all that positively, their chances are so slim and they're hanging by such a tiny thread here that if you're in a situation like they were in on Friday in a one-goal game and playing well, you've got to find a way to close that game out or at the very least get that thing to overtime. And that is just the straight-up facts of the type of hole the Flames have dug themselves here.
Sorry, I was not told to reconnect, so I just figured I would reconnect, and I just joined you right now, so I apologize.
That is on us. That is on us.
I was told to disconnect, and I didn't hear anything, and I looked at the time, and I'm like, well, I'm just going
to
connect.
All good.
What were we talking about, sir?
We have had such technical issues today, didn't even think about it, because I didn't even know if you had disconnected when we got CJ. Basically, we were just talking about what we talked about in the first segment. We were talking about, straight up, the Flames don't have much of a margin for error, so you can't really come out of Friday's loss in Montreal thinking all that positively, despite the fact they played some pretty good hockey.
Yeah, because you came home with, you know, zero in the points column, and again, you lost in regulation of the team you're directly trying to chase down. The only hope you have at a playoff spot, I don't think there's many people, and I don't think the head coach spent much time going over video and talking about all the good things they've done. They've played better to lose point. They've allowed essentially nothing, but it doesn't really matter when you're still getting 0 points at the end of the night.
It was a great sight seeing the Vancouver Canucks get back on the ice last night after 24 days away because of COVID-19 just dismantling their organization. The club played with a good chunk of regulars yesterday. The game was definitely lacking. Wasn't lacking on moments. Bo Horvat had the two goals, including the game winner in overtime. Brayden Holtby with the windmill save, getting his first win since mid-February. But the game also had a nasty knee-on-knee hit from Alex Edler on Zach Hyman. Here's some of the Leafs' reaction.
We just hope he's okay. Such an integral part of our group. I think the elements he brings to our team, and you can't replace that. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. He's battled through so many things since my time being here, the competitor that he is.
Edler got two games handed down from player safety.
By the way, that's John Tavares. I don't know if listeners know that.
That was John Tavares. Goes on. Alex Edler was handed down a two-game suspension from player safety. It was the downside of what was a pretty entertaining game, I thought. Will, if Zach Hyman is to miss extended time, how big of a loss is that for the Leafs?
Oh, it's huge. I think he's a guy who plays in every position, every line. Essentially, he's almost like a plug-and-play guy for Sheldon Keefe, and had a really good year, and really the last 2 years have been really solid for Zach Hyman. I think he is kind of that X factor, that guy who just kind of helps stir the drink. I know we all focus in, Pat, on the huge offensive pieces in Toronto, and rightly so. But again, you know, three straight years where I think Zach Hyman's been a pretty useful player for this team, and I know they're going to miss him, and you hope that he's back in time for the postseason if he is to miss a lengthy amount here in the final, 10, 12 games of the regular season.
Just had Chris Johnston on last segment. Sounds like it is not, like they're optimistic that this is not going to be something season ending or anything like that, but still didn't look good. I think the suspension makes sense. I think that should have been a suspension, so I'm glad the NHL made the right call. But, you know, the thing that is interesting about this is, like, people in Toronto, Maple Leafs fans are, and I get it that it's Maple Leaf fans, so, you know, they're always going to, it's always a little louder when it comes to their players, we get that. But, like, they're talking about him and Team Canada conversations for the next Olympic Games. That's how important Leafs fans believe Zach
Only because
is
he plays
team.
In Toronto. Easy now.
I absolutely. But, I mean, even Easy. Lou. I've brought that up to Lou before, and he absolutely believes that Hyman should be getting that type of consideration because of the role he plays, because of how versatile he is, the penalty killing, all that type of stuff. So, you know, I can't speak as credibly to it because I don't watch the Maple Leafs as much as a Maple Leafs fan does, but I do know that is a conversation that has certainly started to gain some traction in the Toronto area, and that's how important Leafs fans believe Hyman is to their team. So we'll see how long he's out for, and if he is out for a long time, we'll see how that impacts the way Toronto plays, because a lot of people look at him as one of the straws that really stirs that team's drink.
This one is going to make news for quite a while, I feel. The 12 of the biggest European clubs in European football announced plans to break away from to announce a breakaway Super League separate to their domestic leagues in their countries and already separate from the established competitions like the Champions League and Europa League to form a midweek league featuring the elite of the footballing world. Clubs from Germany and France have already said they're not going to take part. But the league is to consist right now of the biggest six in England, three in Spain, and three in Italy, with other invites sent out to other clubs. Here's former Manchester United great and England international Gary Neville. This was quite the rant that was making its rounds around Twitter yesterday.
They're imposters. They're nothing to do. The owners of this club, the owners of Liverpool, the owners of Chelsea, the owners of Manchester City, they're nothing to do with football in this country. There are 100-odd years of history in this country from fans that have lived and loved these clubs. And they need protecting. The fans need protecting. I benefited from football hugely. I've made money out of football. I invest money into a football club. Now, I'm not against money in football, but the principles and ethos of fair competition and the rights to play the game so that Leicester win the league, they go into the Champions League. Manchester United aren't even in the Champions League. Arsenal aren't even in the Champions League. You watched them earlier on today. We're absolute shambles of a football club at the moment. Tottenham aren't in the Champions League. And they want a God-given right to be in there. Seriously, in the midst of a pandemic, an economic crisis, football clubs at National League level going bust nearly, furloughing players, clubs on the edge in League One and Two. And these lot are having Zoom calls about breaking away and basically creating more greed. Joke.
Yeah, boys, this is a fluid situation to watch over the coming weeks. Each club is rumored to have gotten 350 million euros to sign up, with more money to be made. Also today, UEFA officials expect Manchester City, Chelsea, and Real Madrid to be kicked out of the Champions League, which the semifinals are set to resume next week. Pat, something worth paying attention to for sure.
Okay, you've got to help me out with this, because this is not something that I have followed the same way others have. I saw it this morning, and I saw people losing their faculties over it, for lack of a better word. So what is the issue? Why are people so frustrated, Dumas? Why are people in the UK losing their minds over these teams breaking away? What does it mean? What exactly are we talking about here?
Like Gary Neville said, it's just more money getting put into this league. It's taking away the clubs. A lot of these clubs were founded on the backs of the fans and these towns for hundreds of years. And yes, the money in this sport has been huge. It's been huge. It's the world's biggest game. But, you know, a lot of people are mad. The players are mad. Players from these squads, like Liverpool, like we had some guys today say, no, we're not happy. We're not happy for this. It's not good for the game because, yeah, I get it. These 12 biggest clubs, they happen to be the most 12 popular clubs in Europe. It just happens to be. But for a game that's so, it's hockey to them. You know, it's like, I don't want to make the equivalent, but it's like the equivalent of the Toronto Maple Leafs and all the teams that make a ton of money in this league and forming off and creating their own championship away from everyone else that, you know, maybe not have the money to go and get the biggest names around the world.
So are they leaving the Premier League?
That's the thing. We don't know as of yet. that's the thing. It's like they're threatening. A lot of UEFA, Premier League, a lot of these domestic leagues are not happy. And there is threats that they will kick them out if they go through with this. But they do want to establish it's a midweek competition that is identical to the Champions League. And the only difference is you're not going to get kicked out of this league. You're not going to, because your performance is so bad in your domestic regular season. You still get to make $3.5 billion playing this midweek tournament, even if your team isn't the greatest during a domestic season.
Will, you've seen the reaction on social media too. Because I know that you asked the question in our group chat earlier about, like, okay, what exactly are we talking about here? All I know is that people are not happy about this. I am nowhere near smart enough to understand why this is so frustrating to people, but I get that it is frustrating. People are losing their minds over this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for a lot of these people and you know, these smaller clubs, it would essentially be the death of them, I would think. And that's really unfortunate. I think that's where a lot of this hate and anger comes from, because, you know, do everybody love watching these super teams play each other? And that's why we love the Champions League, of course. But you also need the relegation system and these domestic leagues to at least have life, to have any chance of surviving and playing big matches. If you're a Leeds United against a Man U or a Man City is great for that club. And Now they're not going to have that opportunity, especially if it's UEFA or the Premier League kicking them out. They definitely won't have the opportunity to play those teams. And again, I hate to say it, but nobody wants to watch a Norwich or Leeds game. They want to watch them play these big teams. And if they aren't in those leagues, then that viewership and that league is going to lose a lot of money. And that's where you're seeing all this hate. And that's my very brief knowledge on the European football system. But
you know more than I do.
I believe it would be the death of some of these domestic leagues.
Yeah,
I really
like you said, like the teams at the bottom of the English pyramid, like we're talking like League One, League Two, the Championship, like the small town clubs, they're going to get really hurt from this because they, you know, like if the Premier League doesn't have the same amount of money, because that's the thing, getting to the Premier League, it's the most expensive league on the planet. Just being in that makes you millions of dollars for such a small club. And if it takes some money out of the Premier League and when you don't have those big six, it's not a... not a good time. But yeah, boys, that wraps up headlines for your Monday, April 19th.
Big Show Headlines brought to you by Hyatt Infinity. Lease or finance selected Infinity models and receive 3 payments on Hyatt Infinity. Heritage Meadows Road on Luxury Lane.
We are underway on this Monday edition of The Big Show alongside Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are live in the Iconic studio today, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Burner Management, it's Iconic. Follow them on Twitter at IconicEC. Pat Steinberg here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Will Nault at his satellite studio. And Patrick Dumas is holding the fort down in the Iconic studio this afternoon. The fantasy hockey postseason almost upon us. Our fantasy hockey expert Nick Alberg is up next with some tips on how to exploit the schedule and manipulate things a little bit as we head to the fantasy playoffs. That's next on The Big Show. Stay with us on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The Big Show is live and streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Welcome back to the program, and the fantasy hockey postseason is around the corner. It is upon us. Time to get you set for the fantasy hockey playoffs. Welcome back to the program. It's a Monday, and as always on a Monday just before 4 o'clock, we welcome in our fantasy hockey expert from Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.ca. Nick Alberga joins us. And Nick, yeah, the fantasy hockey playoffs are actually here. It's amazing that we've gotten this far, but we're into the final quarter of the regular season.
You're right, Pat. It's great to be with you, and hopefully nobody turns the dial knowing we're about to talk about Sam Bennett. But certainly, you know, we're going to talk about the trickle effect of the deadline and four-game teams. I think schedule manipulation is an important tactic this time of year, but you're so right. I hope, as you know, somebody who follows and covers fantasy hockey the way I do, that we never have to deal with a season like this. You know, I was telling a friend yesterday, I couldn't remember in recent memory one game being canceled or postponed in the NHL. Try like 300 this year, right?
Yeah, it's nonstop, and now you've got 19 games in 32 days for one team, and who knows if that's even the end of it. Well, let's dive right in, because you've got some tips on how to manipulate the schedule a little bit and manipulate it for the best of your team.
You're right, and this time of year, I'm all into the tactic of schedule manipulation. In fact, I implore it all season long, for that matter, and I pick up guys all the time. People get upset, but that's what the rules, and I'm going to stick with them. I think certainly, you know, in this schedule, and this applies to people clearly in weekly leagues, daily pickup leagues, and you have maybe a max in terms of pickups, I think you want to identify teams that are playing on sort of the off nights, if you will, and that's usually Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, or Sundays. So I think this week specifically, you know, you're looking at teams like Minnesota, teams like the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, Dallas is a bit of a different schedule, but they got a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday that I'm certainly looking at. And the Boston Bruins, another team that comes to mind this time of year. So that's, you know, that's pretty much the gist of what schedule manipulation is around, is getting as many guys as possible in your lineup to beat the opposition, if you will, with quantity as opposed to quality.
So you mentioned Boston, and Taylor Hall has landed there. He has made a nice impact early on with his new team. Tell us about the Taylor Hall fantasy impact now and going forward.
Yeah, it's unbelievable too, because I've been reminiscing in one of my leagues. You know, I had, you know, I should start by saying I had Taylor High, you know, ranked the highest out of any fantasy person out there. I liked him going into this season. I like the fit in Buffalo. It's, you know, I was wrong. You know, I'll admit it. I like this fit more in Boston than I did in Buffalo, clearly. I think right away we're seeing the impact of him going to Boston, you know, having the attachment, the exposure to the big boys at times on power play one. At this point in time, I think his line mates, David Krejci and Craig Smith. Smith, by the way, has 12 points in the last 10 games, are must-own players, especially with so much racetrack ahead for the Boston Bruins. We talked about the COVID breaks, Boston, a team among them. So I think you're looking at waiver ads right now from the Boston Bruins, but to Taylor Hall specifically, 2 goals and an assist, 3 points in 4 games so far for the Boston Bruins. And I like what he's been cooking up with his line mates and David Krejci and Craig Smith. So I'd say all three are must-owns right now.
What about Anthony Mantha in Washington?
So I love the fit, first and foremost. I like that trade from both sides. And we touched on it, of course, on my hit last week. But I think you look through 4 games for Anthony Mantha, pretty much as advertised, just a perfect player who just needed a change of scenery. And to an extent, I think Sam Bennett's that type of guy, too, who we'll get to momentarily. But 4 goals in 4 games, 5 points. He's playing on the second line with Backstrom and Oshie. He's playing on the second power play unit. Having said that, this is not the week to own Anthony Mantha. We talked about schedule manipulation. Well, the Capitals played just 2 times, one of 6 teams to do so. So I would not be afraid. You know, it's been great this ride the last week with Anthony Mantha, but don't be afraid to jump out and jump back in later on, because, again, you want to get guys in your lineup as opposed to having Mantha not play till Thursday and just rotting away on your bench. But, long-term perspective, from a fantasy look, I love Anthony Mantha in Washington.
Nick Foligno has yet to debut in Toronto, but that's coming soon. What are we thinking when it comes to Foligno's impact with the Maple Leafs?
You're right. Yet another barrier in this crazy, wacky, peculiar fantasy hockey season is the mandatory 7-day quarantine here in Canada. And Nick Foligno has almost done it. I think it started last Tuesday. So it sounds maybe at this point, Thursday night in Winnipeg could be his Maple Leafs debut. And I think right away he's going to play on that second line left wing with John Tavares and William Nylander. Those two have looked pretty good as of late. Nylander missed 5 games due to COVID protocols, returned last night, picked up 2 assists. John Tavares has 12 points in the last 8 games. And I think, you know, considering Toronto's bewildering power play right now, I think Foligno is going to get every look in the world to stick, whether it be on PP1 or PP2 for that matter. So I think once Foligno has done his quarantine, I think you have to pick him up.
We're in conversation with Nick Alberga from Sportsnet.ca and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He is our fantasy hockey expert, joins us every Monday to set you up for the week ahead and to set you up for your fantasy hockey postseason. You want to focus on a couple of players, Matt Zuccarello, Colin Blackwell, a pair of guys you want to keep your eye on.
Exactly. Those are, you know, 2 other teams we talked about. And in general, I think, Pat, we'll go over the schedule in a second. But Zuccarello's got, you know, the last 3 games, 4 goals and 1 assist. We talked about him earlier in this fantasy season. Anytime anybody's attached to Kirill Kaprizov, I think you have to have a look, especially somebody of the ilk of the pedigree of Matt Zuccarello. He's had a great bounce back season. I think he's an easy must-add right now. And Colin Blackwell's not really a guy who gets a lot of publicity, but he's been a phenomenal story. A little ladder in his career, but he's really done his thing this season, and he works really, really hard, and they've rewarded him. You know, David Quinn, I think if there's one thing we've noticed from David Quinn in the NHL is that if you work hard and play the way he wants you to play, he's going to reward you. And I think nothing better on Broadway than playing with Ryan Strome and Artemi Panarin, and that's what's going on 5-on-5 for Blackwell. The last 10 games, 4 goals, 6 assists, 10 points, so it's these type of cheeky ads that it could put a fantasy roster over the top. So I would definitely have a look at those 2 guys going forward.
And you've got a few other potential waiver wire targets too.
I do. So in general, we'll look at the schedule. There are 50 games in total. There are 15 teams in general I think I would target in terms of waiver ads this week, because they have 4-game slates. Boston, Buffalo, Carolina, Columbus, Dallas, Detroit, Florida, Minnesota, Montreal, New Jersey, the Rangers, Pittsburgh, San Jose, Tampa, and Vegas. And I think in terms of waiver looks, I'm looking at Casey Mittelstadt with Buffalo, Jacob Slavin, if you need a defenseman from the Carolina Hurricanes. Adam Ernie had an 8-game point streak with Detroit. It was snapped the other game, but still 8 points in the last 9 for him. A cheeky little look there. I talked about Florida, Nikita Gusev playing on the top line with Mason Marchman and Alexander Barkov, and also PP1. And little old Sam Bennett now with the Florida Panthers and the attachment to Jonathan Huberdeau and Anthony DeClaire on the second line. I think a must add right now. I talked about Zuccarello. I talked about Blackwell. And the last name I would mention is Jeff Carter, fresh off picking up his first point for the Pittsburgh Penguins, has a 4-game week as well. So without question, I think we're looking at teams who play a lot, right?
No doubt about it. Great stuff, as always, Nick. Appreciate you bearing with us on the technology front. I'm glad we could get you all hooked up, and we'll do it again next week. Be well, my friend.
My pleasure. Looking forward to Patrick Marleau's game tonight.
It's a record-setting game for Patrick Marleau. We know that much. Nick Alberga from Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.ca. Check out his 20 fantasy thoughts every Sunday night at Sportsnet.ca. He is our fantasy hockey expert. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, open for takeout and delivery. When you're tired of cooking, call 403-248-3344. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Is this Calgary's best hockey of the season? And if so, too little, too late? We'll discuss that and a whole lot more on our Daily Flames Roundtable. We kick off the 4 o'clock hour in just minutes on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Streaming now through the Sportsnet mobile app. This is The Big Show. Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Calgary.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. With 35 service bays to get your Mercedes-Benz ready for spring adventures. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Minutes from the airport.
Let's get right to it. Hour number three of The Big Show is underway. Your drive home is underway. It's Pat Steinberg, Will Nault, and now the radio voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us live here at the Scotiabank Saddledome to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. 7 o'clock face-off tonight, Calgary and the Ottawa Senators. We hit the air at 6 o'clock with your Calgary Flames warm-up. 2-1 the final score on Friday night. Flames have their win streak snapped at 3. Prior to that, wins over Montreal, Toronto, and Edmonton in reverse order. Guys, are the Flames playing their best hockey of the season right now?
Well, it feels like a long season, so I'm not sure I remember what happened earlier in the season all that well, but based on my recollection, yes, I do think they're playing their best hockey of the season right now. Had a 3-game winning streak going into that game against the Canadiens on Friday, and I know they lose 2-1, but for me, and I said this at the end of the broadcast, they were the better of the two teams. Outshot, outchanced, outplayed, just didn't outscore the Canadiens, and kind of looked like the Flames during some other stretches this season where they played some pretty good games but just couldn't put the puck in their opponent's net often enough. But, you know, I've liked their last 4 games a lot, and I know that it was kind of 3 steps forward, 1 step back when you look at the last 4, because really moral victories don't mean much to this team with where they're at in the standings right now. But I do think that their play is trending in the right direction, and it does give me hope heading down the stretch here.
It's funny you say the moral victories don't really matter at this point. I would suggest that it doesn't really matter. They're not playing their best. They're playing their best hockey, sorry. I mean, it's too little too late. And, you know, I said this to Pat in the first hour of the program today, Derek, that, you know, it's just really unfortunate because a lot of people in this city, whether you're fans or media, you have seen this act many, many times before. And it's hard to say that, you know, this is going to be able to transfer the next season. We're all talking about impending change. And yeah, okay, you're playing much better under Sutter, and you're understanding the way that he wants you to play, and you're essentially allowing nothing right now, which is exactly what Daryl Sutter wants. It's just really unfortunate that at the end of the day, for me, it doesn't really matter that they're playing their best hockey, because they're going to miss the playoffs likely, and that's all people are going to remember at the end of the day.
Well, so if my glass is half full or half empty, is it fair to say yours is completely empty?
Have you thrown your glass at the
wall? Oh, yeah, it's been gone for a long time. Absolutely.
Can I try to pour a little water into it for you? Can I just try?
Sure.
Is there a glass left, Will?
Yeah, there's a glass, but there's a little hole, so it depends the rate that Derek's pouring.
Okay, let me try to pour a little water in. I'm going to try to paint a picture. I'm not going to go too far down the road. I'm talking about just this week. So is it feasible that the Flames beat the Senators tonight?
I mean, yeah, you said that about all 7 this year,
okay,
though, right?
No, just we're going to take it 1 game at a time,
yes,
here. Is it feasible that the Oilers beat the Canadiens in the 2 games they're playing this week?
Sure.
Okay, is it feasible that the Flames take 2 of 3 from the Canadiens in their 3-game miniseries, which starts on Friday?
Sure.
If all of that happens, the Habs will have a 2-point lead with 1 game in hand, and a much more difficult and condensed schedule down the stretch than the Flames have. Not saying all of that's going to happen. I mean, that's a lot, yeah, that has to happen this week, but I don't think it's so far-fetched that there shouldn't be at least a couple drops of water in your glass, if you know what I'm saying, Will.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, look, is the glass shattered? No, but it's empty for me. And quite frankly, Derek, you listed about 9 ifs until you got to to where you made it at least feasible that they could come back and make a playoff run. So is it completely gone? Like, am I writing them off before that they should be written off? Absolutely. But I also think that there's a lot working against them when it's all said and done. And I'd be willing to bet a lot of money they don't make the playoffs.
Well, I mean, guys, the percentages on the two different sites that we talk about, both are one's at 6%, one's at 5%. I mean, it's going to take – is it a miracle? Maybe not. It's going to take a ton of good fortune and a ridiculous run for the Flames to get there. Daryl Sutter said it today. We heard it on headlines. He said, yeah, we got 12 games left. We ate at home, four on the road. We got to win 12. That's kind of the mindset of the Flames. And do they really have to win 12? Maybe not, but pretty close to that, because Montreal is not going to lose all of their remaining games between now and the end of the season. They're not a team that is elite, but they're not a team that is so bad that they're just, in my opinion, they're just going to go completely.
That's my belief, Pat. That's why I'm so steadfast in it, because yeah. What Derek's saying is absolutely true. But I just think that if Montreal plays 500, they're in. So, like, for me, that's not that crazy to suggest. Have they left the door open? Are they playing worse? Sure. But the Flames have got to go like 10 or 11 of 12 here in victories to at least have a chance. And that's kind of giving Montreal the least benefit, if that makes any sense.
Well, what happens in these head-to-head games are the most important thing.
It's the biggest, yeah.
I mean, the Flames can get themselves back into it if they win all three, and the Canadiens can bury the Flames if they win two of three, maybe even one of three, depending on what happens in some other games this week and next. But
yeah.
Here's something else that, again, if you're looking for reason to have hope heading down the stretch and reason to keep tuning in on the radio and on television, here's something else that I think will add to that. The Flames will play one game every 2.6 days from now until the end of the regular season. 8 at home, 4 on the road. The Canadiens will play one game every 1.7 days. 6 at home, 8 on the road. So not only are they playing a game less than every 2 days, they've got a lot of travel mixed in there, and a lot of it from west to east, and they have no games left against the Canucks, who just came back from missing 3-plus weeks because of COVID. So, and again, you look at strength of schedule. Flames have the easiest remaining schedule in the Scotia North Division. The Canadiens are in the middle of the pack, fourth hardest, fourth easiest, whatever way you want to look at it. So I'm not saying it's probable. I'm just saying it's not impossible. Listen, in any other season, they'd be dead in the water, because you wouldn't have five head-to-head games left against a team in your final 14. Two of those games are gone. You got three left. And you wouldn't have those games left in a normal season. But as we know, this has been far from a normal season. And it's those head-to-head games that, if you're looking to have some hope, those are the things that should give you a little bit of hope.
By the way, I do believe the Flames are playing probably their best hockey of the season. These last four games, I've quite liked what we've seen from them. I'm just very much of the opinion that it probably is statistically too little too late. Is it completely off the table? Is there, you know, can you start to, no questions asked, book vacations in May if you're the Flames? No, you're not at that point. But the chances of them getting there are very small. The chances of Montreal being able to do what it takes to get there are very strong. If Montreal goes 7-7, Calgary can only lose two times between now and the end of the season. That shows you, regardless of what happens in those three games, Calgary could win all three of those games, and all Montreal would have to do is go 7-7 overall, and Calgary could still only afford to lose two other times. That is the circumstance that they're in right now. But in a vacuum, yeah, they are playing their best hockey of the season. And that, at the very least, if you are very much in the glass half full camp, well, that gives you some encouragement that they might be able to keep this thing interesting for a little while longer, which I think at this point, if you are a glass half full person, if you haven't completely started waving the white flag as a Flames fan, I think any little bit of encouragement is something that you'll grasp onto. And I, to be honest with you guys, I honestly do not think that there is anything wrong with either side. If you are frustrated at the team because now they're playing well and they're going to play themselves out of a better draft pick and still end up missing the playoffs, and that's kind of the line of thought that you're, I'm not going to criticize you because I understand that. And if you're holding on and saying, no, I don't believe in Montreal, the Flames have underachieved all year long, they're only six back with three head-to-head, they can do this, I don't blame you there either. I think you're very justified on either side of that spectrum.
Yeah, and ultimately the Flames are going to have to take care of their business, especially in those games against the Canadiens. But fellas, after watching two games, calling two games against the Habs last week, and after watching lots of their games on television of late, I'm not convinced they're going to go 500 down the stretch. They've got a tough schedule, a very compacted schedule, and they've lost five of their last seven. So we'll see.
We will indeed. It is our Daily Flames roundtable. First, Calgary has Ottawa before those three games against the Habs. Tonight at 7 o'clock, we've got a 6 o'clock Calgary Flames warm-up. Mr. Uh-oh is Will Nault. He is Derek Wills. And my name is Pat Stein.
Daryl Wills.
We've talked about must win, can't lose. This one definitely is can't lose. You can't lose another game to the Ottawa Senators.
No.
You just can't. You've already lost 5-7. You've already lost the season series to the Sens. You can't keep giving points up to the worst team in the North Division. I'm not being too harsh, am I?
No, you're absolutely not. I mean, this is a Senators team that is certainly a lot better now than when it started the season 2-12-1. I mean, 2-12-1. They buried themselves 15 games into the season. They had a 167 point percentage in their first 15 games. But when you look at their last 30, fellas, only a game below 500 in the win-loss column, 13-14-3, a 483 point percentage. So this isn't the same Senators team that the Canucks were beating up on and other teams were beating up on earlier in the season. With that said, the Senators only have a winning record against two teams in the Scotia North Division. The Flames are one of them. They're 5-2-0 against the Flames. And thankfully, the Canadians are the other, and they did do the Flames a little favor on Saturday, beating the Canadians 4-0 in a head-to-head game. They're now 5-3-0 against the Habs this season. But no, I mean, ultimately, at this point in time, guys, it doesn't matter who they're playing. The last-place Senators, they won't play the first-place Maple Leafs again, but they've got games coming up against everybody else in the division. So if you're the Flames, you can't worry about who your opponent is. You just have to beat everybody the league puts in front of you. And tonight that starts with the Senators. And, yeah, they've got to have this game. And what's, I think, as disheartening as anything else about this season series isn't just the fact that the Flames have lost 5-7 to the Senators. It's how they've lost those five games to the Senators. There have been some lopsided ones where the Flames just simply weren't ready to play. Now, I'm pretty confident they're going to give us a good game tonight. Might not lead to the right result, but they do seem to be trending in the right direction. So we'll see if that leads to a better result against this pesky Sen squad.
Yeah, exactly what Derek just talked about there is kind of why I was saying, numerous times. It just has not been a great matchup for this Flames team all year long, no matter who's behind the bench, no matter who's in the lineup. So we'll see what tonight brings, but I'm with Derek. I think if anything, if we know it's true, I mean, you're hoping anyways that the Flames team is going to be ready to play and knowing that they can't lose this one tonight, they cannot give up any points. And it doesn't even matter if you allow Ottawa to get one. If you somehow have to sneak this in overtime to get the victory, that's certainly better than anything else. So, or better than a loss, I should say. So that's kind of what I'm looking at tonight. It's not an ideal matchup for the Flames, but to your initial question, Pat, yeah, absolutely. This isn't a can't-lose game. There's no other way to view it, in my opinion.
Well, and I mean, I take a look at Calgary's final 12 games. I don't think they're going 12-0, and they're going to lose games. They're probably going to lose to some of the better teams, whether it's Winnipeg or the two games remaining against Edmonton, or we'll see what those four games against Vancouver mean, but they're probably not going 12-0. But two of their final 12
negative,
are
Nelly.
Against Ottawa. And, well, if you think they're going 12-0, then...
I'm just kidding.
But, no, two of those final 12 are against Ottawa. And you have got a significant edge on them, like everybody does, for the rest of the North Division. They are in seventh place by a significant margin. And, yes, they're better than they were at the beginning of the season. They're still a team you have to beat. And that's why I look at this as you can't be giving up points against this team. You are a better team on paper. You are a better team in the standings. So you better go out and play like that if you're the Flames, or else if you're not winning against the Senators, you probably don't deserve to be in the playoffs to begin with.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the Senators are also the worst road team in the NHL this season. They're 6-16-0 outside of Canadian Tire Center. They're 6 road wins, fewest in the league. They're 273 road point percentage, lowest in the league. So this is a game you have to have, and the Flames have been better at home than they have been on the road this season. So we'll see if they can use home ice to their advantage here tonight.
Okay, final topic on the Daily Flames roundtable. It's Derek Wills, Will Nault, and Pat Steinberg along with you. As of right now, the Flames sit sixth in the North Division on points percentage. The team in front of them just happens to be the Vancouver Canucks, sitting in fifth. The Canucks have seven games in hand on the Calgary Flames, and there are four head-to-head battles between these two still to go. Now, Vancouver, by points, they're way out of it, but they still have 18 games remaining this season compared to Calgary's 12 games remaining. How much of a factor are the Vancouver Canucks in this playoff conversation?
I might end up with my foot in my mouth, and if I do, fair enough. But I don't think they're a factor, Pat. I mean, when you look at the other teams that have had to deal with COVID, and no other team has had to deal with COVID to the extent that the Canucks have, I don't know how they're going to be able to do it. They're going to play their final 18 games in a span of 30 days. That's one game every 1.7 days. Only seven of them are in Vancouver. 11 of them are on the road. So not only do you have 18 games in 30 days, you got a lot of travel mixed in there as well. And, you know, when I look at the Canucks, it's really hard to compare their situation to the situation of any other team. But I think the most comparable situation, Will, would probably be the Stars, because they had a lot of guys out with COVID earlier in the season. And when they started playing, they were playing pretty well for a while. And then COVID seemed to catch up with them. And I can't imagine that guys that had to deal with COVID, especially some of the Canucks that had more serious cases, aren't going to be feeling the effects of that for the rest of the regular season. So I'd be shocked if they, A, stayed healthy, and B, found a way to win like they did last night in a game against the Maple Leafs where they were badly outshot and badly outchanced and somehow found a way to win that hockey game. I think adrenaline probably had a lot to do with that. But, no, I don't think the Canucks are going to be a big factor down the stretch. Outside, if the Flames are playing meaningful games down the stretch, well, their final four games of the season are against the Canucks. So if they're not in it, they certainly could play spoiler.
Yeah, I mean, to be respectful of the question, Pat, zero chance for me. I mean, Derek just talked about it. Let's not kid ourselves. They were badly outplayed last night. Braden Holtby is the only reason why they won the contest. And with their schedule about to get absolutely insane, Derek mentioned the travel. I can't see it. I really can't.
I'm just, at this point, I think that they have to be given the benefit of the doubt that they could be a factor, because mathematically they're in a better spot than Calgary is. Mathematically, Vancouver is ahead of Calgary on points percentage, and mathematically they're only, four back of the Flames with six in hand. So, that's a pretty good spot to be in. If you're the Canucks, you're saying, well, Calgary's very catchable for us right now, but that schedule is not pretty, and the way they played wasn't incredible, and they've got guys who are coming back after a long layoff, and some of those guys have had to battle something really difficult. So they've got an uphill climb. They really do. But they're also you can't write them off, I guess, is what I'm saying. They're four back at Calgary, Derek, and they've got six games in hand.
But here's the other thing, Pat.
Were we not, just before I finish, were we not saying that, well, Calgary's eight back of Montreal, but blah, if you're Vancouver, the same would have to be true in giving them the benefit of the doubt. If you're the Canucks and in their market, I would imagine the same conversations would have to be being had there as we've been having about Calgary and their playoff chances.
Here's the difference. They have zero remaining games against the Canadiens.
That is true.
So you throw those proverbial four-pointers out the window. Sure, they've got four proverbial four-pointers coming up against the Flames, but the Flames aren't the team they're going to likely have to catch and pass for a Stanley Cup playoff spot. So, you know, for me, and I've been saying this for weeks, it's the head-to-head games against the Canadiens that give the Flames a chance. Some look at it as no chance, some as a small chance. Maybe some are more optimistic than that. I think that would be probably hard to be more optimistic than that right now. But, you know, for me, it's these three remaining head-to-head games against the Habs that give the Flames a fighting chance to get back into the playoff race. And the Canucks have used all nine games in their season series against the Habs up. So not being able to really pick up 4 points with one win, so to speak, in those games against the Canucks is, I think, going to make it almost impossible for the Canadiens.
Could we see the Canucks pass the Flames at some point?
Potentially. I mean, they've got those four games at the end of the season.
Yeah. It's going to be very well if they play those games. I'm still wondering if both teams are out by then, do they play those games? But that's a conversation for another time. Canucks won their first game back. They've only got 18 remaining as opposed to Calgary's 12. They do have the 4 in hand on Montreal, 6 in hand on Calgary when it comes to the North Division schedule right now. All right, he's Derek, he's Will, I'm Pat. That is our Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable.
Daily Calgary Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. With 35 service bays to get your Mercedes-Benz ready for spring adventures. Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the airport.
So whether or not you think the Canucks are a factor or not, whether you think that they're going to actually be able to get themselves truly into the playoff conversation, what they did last night was pretty impressive. That's next on the big show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're locked on to the big show, Calgary Sports Talk in the afternoon. Okay, smart speaker, play Sportsnet 960.
Nice pass left wing for Horvat. He's got speed. Horvat left circle, hard shot, he scores! In their first game since March 24th, after the majority of the team tested positive for COVID-19, Bo Horvat wins it in overtime, his second of the game, 16th of the year. And the Canucks knock off the top team in the North.
Final score from Vancouver last night. First game back for the Vancouver Canucks. A victorious one. Now, we just talked in the last segment about how much we see the Canucks being a factor in the North Division playoffs. And that is a conversation that we can have and we can continue to have. And we'll see how it all plays out. But to start off a stretch, Will, of 19 games in 32 days, and despite the fact that, you know, they were probably outchanced and outplayed and on the back foot for most of that game against the Maple Leafs, they still found a way to pick up two pretty important points. And it was definitely a gutsy effort, if you're looking for one word, at least for me, one word above all else. That was a gutsy effort for the Vancouver Canucks yesterday. This is going to be an absolute grind to end their season, an absolute meat grinder, and I don't know if they're going to be able to play the type of hockey they're going to need to play to be relevant and to stay in the playoff conversation. But it certainly was, knowing the road that they've got now ahead of them, and I understand that the Canucks are not the most popular team in this city, but it was pretty neat to see them pick up a victory last night at home to Toronto. I won't lie to you on that one.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Braden Holtby dialed the clock back to his days in Washington.
From?
Yeah, he was brilliant, and quite frankly, the only reason they won that game, I thought they were badly outplayed, a game they probably shouldn't have won, but Braden Holtby did a terrific job, and you could see the emotion on the face of Bo Horvat when he scored that OT winner, just pure relief. And I can't imagine how much fun it was to be back on the ice, just for the mental health of a lot of these guys, and Knowing that some of your best friends went through a really, really tough time over the last couple of weeks. Yeah, I think that was a huge just moral boost for the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, it was a moral victory to get back on the ice. It's the cherry on top to get the win, but they certainly were not the better team. And you can expect that after being off for 23 days or whatever it was.
This whole situation in Vancouver has been fascinating, because it has been hard to watch. It has been controversial. There have been plenty of rumors and innuendo behind the scenes as to how it was handled. Players not happy with the organization. I can tell you, Will, other North Division teams aren't happy with the way Vancouver handled it. Like, the whole thing has been a really... It's been a messed up situation, and that's not even talking about the players who had to go through what they went through and how difficult that was, and the potential safety issues that loom having to play 19 your final 19 games in 32 days. Like, this has turned into the biggest mess of the NHL season. And they had Buffalo, they had New Jersey, they had some other COVID situations happen. But I don't know if anybody expected it, any one team to turn into as much of a mess as what it turned into Vancouver. And I think that, you know, that's good. We're going to look back and wonder how many different things could have been done along the way to avoid all of what ended up happening.
I hope we're not looking back on this COVID season too often myself, but
Good point by you. Touché to Will Nault.
Yeah, I feel like we can just put this one under the rug and forget about it. That's kind of how I feel about it. And, you know, playoffs upcoming. I said the same thing in the summer, and I'll say it again. I mean, it's awesome, but playoffs without fans sucks. And that's kind of where we're heading. And you know, maybe certain locations in the U.S., you've got an opportunity to get fans in the building. But, yeah, I think more often than not, people are going to be hoping that this is a situation that, you know, we're not talking about for too long, and we don't have to focus on for too long. But yeah, I think that, you know, Vancouver situation, Pat, especially when you, and I understand that, you know, one situation is not the same as the other, but you look at how Montreal kind of shut down their team after one positive test and, you know, really didn't do anything. And from the outside, I even said to myself, I'm like, that's probably a bit of an overreaction. Like, you probably could have played the game that night or the next night or whatever it was. And they canceled those and a couple of days, and you know, they came back after a 5-6 day break and were able to play the rest, and the one player was the only one affected. And I know from the outside, and you know, who knows how they handled it or what they said in the inside, but you know, you had a Vancouver situation where this test was flared up, but they held a full 23-24 man morning skate the next day, and that just, you know, probably shouldn't happen. And that's why you see or hear some of the frustrations from other North Division teams and the league. And yeah, this is not a pretty situation, and they're now paying for it. And I think it's partly why the NHL really is showing no sympathy on their schedule either, because they have to get them in. They're a business. They want to play all those games, but they're also not going to wait around for the Vancouver Canucks. So it's a tough situation all around, but cool, they got it started off with a victory last night. The NHL did cut them some slack by moving that game from Friday to Sunday. Also not playing a back-to-back. They don't play again until tomorrow. So all of that is good. But, yeah, I'm just hoping we're not looking back on this in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, it'd be nice to just start sometime in, like, September and October and just be pretty pretty much back to normal in having NHL conversations.
Yeah, I don't think buildings will be 100%, but I do think we'll have fans, and that's just a step in the right direction.
It'll
and again,
feel way different.
If we don't have to look
at
these, and I love – God love the Salem staff. They did a great job, but – I don't want to look at that Dodge Ram truck or those red tarps any longer at the side of them. I want to see people. That's what I want.
Yeah, I'd like to see some humans.
I want to see that one idiot in a neon green shirt in the sea of red. You know, that's what I want to see.
Person who forgets that, hey, sea of red, I'm going to wear my
white
jersey.
No, they do it on purpose, Pat. Come on.
No, don't wear your white one. Wear something red. Come on.
What about my neon green shirt, Dad? No. Put that one away. We do have some news, Pat, if you want to pass it along with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That's where I was going to go right now, because we were going to talk about, I had it written down on the script, what do you think Alex Edler should get for a suspension? Well, we know he's getting 2 games. And how long is Zach Hyman going to be out as a result? He's going to be about out 2 weeks. A sprained MCL is the news out of Toronto when it comes to Zach Hyman, which, if you're the Maple Leafs, I think you're breathing a sigh of relief. A 2-game suspension for Edler, I think, you know, as much as neither of us can really put our finger on what the Department of NHL Player Safety is thinking any given time, I do think that we both believe that that was one that needed to be suspended. 2 games makes sense for me. But if you're the Maple Leafs, just a 2-week injury for Zach Hyman, you're thanking your lucky stars on that one. That guy's a pretty important part of their top 6 forward mix.
Yeah, he avoided the worst. It's a minimum of 2 weeks, so we'll see what that looks like at the end of the 2-week evaluation. But yeah, knowing the playoffs are on the horizon, we talked about his importance. I think if you're Sheldon Keefe and that coaching staff, you're pretty relieved at those MRI results and that it is just a sprained MCL and it's not a damage to the ACL or anything more serious with that knee. Knee injuries are never fun. They're super unpredictable. But yeah, pretty safe to say here the Leafs avoided the worst and if anything, should have Zach Hyman back for game 1 of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
We're kind of spinning you around the North Division on this Monday drive home. The big show is well underway. He's Will Nault. My name is Pat Steinberg. I wanted to bounce something off. We didn't have a chance to bounce off it when Lou mentioned it a couple of hours ago, but it certainly resonated. Like, you and I are both on the same page that right now Montreal is not doing anything that's knocking our socks off, and they are keeping teams like Vancouver and Calgary in the conversation because of their inability to truly close the door. They seem pretty committed to not just slamming that door shut right now. But Lou made the point that, you know, when things get urgent and all of a sudden where you're not trying to manufacture urgency, because a 6-point edge is pretty comfortable. Like, if you're the Habs, I don't know how much you're sweating right now. If it does get a little bit more urgent, I do wonder if that changes things for Montreal. But right now, they're just, they are not looking like a team that is fighting for their playoff lives. And I wonder if they believe that they're fighting for their playoff lives right now.
Well, and I think for them, I mean, you want to have that, and lose exactly 100% absolutely right. I mean, you have, you know, look at the standings when you wake up as a player, you can see that, yeah, okay, we've got a 6-point edge on the Calgary Flames. We just beat them in regulation. Yeah, that urgency probably isn't there. Now, that being said, the way that this next week goes, with 3 games in 4 nights at the end of it, you're going to have a pretty good indication of where things stand. And I do wonder if that does flip a switch or change anything with Montreal. I would suggest that, you know, for everybody, and I think the same case was made earlier today on the Rintoul show, Pat, about Edmonton. I mean, they're very entrenched in that third spot, and there's nothing really they can do in terms of, okay, hypothetically, could you catch Winnipeg? Sure. But you're probably in that 2-3 matchup, just a matter of whether you're starting at home mm-hmm. or on the road. And I don't know if there's a lot of urgency in Edmonton right now. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing going to the playoffs. But I would say that there's very similar things happening with Montreal. And that's why this 3-game series, I think, is going to be super fun to watch. Because if Montreal loses that first game, for example, you might see that switch start to flip a little bit. And maybe you do see a team play with a little more urgency than what we're seeing right now. And I know that's been your biggest takeaway or criticism of the Habs, Pat, is you just don't know if there's a lot of a pulse there on that team, because they are, I think, from the outside, looking like a team that feels very comfortable in that number 4 seed.
Carey Price is back. He returned to their lineup on Saturday in the 4-0 loss to Ottawa. And Brendan Gallagher is not going to miss the rest of the season. We know his injury is not season-ending. They do expect him back at some point. The question is when it comes to Gallagher. And that's a different team. I mean, both you and I are big-time appreciators of the player Brendan Gallagher is. You don't have that guy in your lineup. Mm-hmm. We're just talking about Zach Hyman and what he means to Toronto. Well, I think you can multiply that a little bit by how important Gallagher is on a Habs team that doesn't have the same type of high-powered offense that Toronto boasts. You take a guy like Gallagher out of that lineup, they're going to feel it.
Well, we just talked about pressure and urgency. He's a guy who kind of, you know, stresses that on his teammates and lives and breathes that. Is a guy who was smaller, a late-round pick, and fought his way to the NHL. I think that's a guy that, you know, kind of is their heart and soul for a lot of people. And no disrespect to Shea Weber, but there's a lot of people, Pat, that believe he's their emotional leader. And he's that guy who absolutely stirs the drink. And I don't think it's any coincidence that what you're seeing right now with Montreal and maybe the ability or why they're leaving that door open, a big part of that is because of the absence of Brendan Gallagher. And, they hope to have him back at some point. And if they can hang on to a playoff spot, I'm sure they're going to love to have him back for that opening round series, potentially against Toronto. But there's no question, Pat, that not only does he leave you a pretty big hole on the score sheet at times, he also leaves a big hole in that locker room. And I think right now for a team that maybe needs to be kicked in the arse, I think that's a guy that would be perfect in that setting. And unfortunate for Dominic Ducharme and the Habs, they don't have that available to them right now.
Montreal, Edmonton tonight, 7:00 from Rogers Place in Edmonton. That's the other North Division game on the slate. Calgary and Ottawa getting going at exactly the same time. The Sportsnet 960 Backyard Blowout is here. It's on all month long. Go to sportsnet.ca/960. Click on the contest tab for more information. But every time you hear the Calgary Flames goal horn during a commercial break, you'll get a keyword. Once you hear that code word, text it into 960-960 with your first and last last name, and that's going to get you an automatic entry into our grand prize draw. It will also automatically enter you into our daily draw from Landmark Cinemas. And then our grand prize draw, well, you're going to get to choose one of three outstanding backyard packages. You've got the Backyard Relaxation Package. That is courtesy of our friends at Paradise Bay. You've got the Backyard Rental Package provided by Green Drop. And then you've got the Backyard Entertainment Package provided by Wild Rose Brewery. Wild Rose Brewery aims to keep quality beer and food in the hands and bellies of our hardworking Albertans. Check out wildrosebrewery.com for delivery and takeout, or hit up the taproom patio located in the Curry Barracks. As the big show rolls on a Monday, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.